Welcome to the Compliance Perspectives Podcast. I'm Adam Turtletaub from the Society of Corporate Compliance and Ethics and Healthcare Compliance Association. Joining us today from New York is Scott Moritz. Scott is Senior Managing Director at FTI Consulting. And today we're going to be talking about what can be a sensitive issue, which is when you make changes to your investigation. Scott, thank you for taking the time to talk to us today.
Well, thanks for having me, Adam.
Totally our pleasure. So, Scott, when is the time to make the first transition, which can be from an in-house investigation to using an outside resource to handle the investigation?
Well, Adam, a lot of investigations kind of have an arc to them, and many of them, the allegations at hand are maybe nonspecific and of unknown reliability. So the typical approach is to take kind of a limited investigation, usually with internal resources to the extent the organization has the appropriate personnel, to really kind of test the merits of the allegations as a way of seeing whether it's appropriate to commit further resources to maybe a more comprehensive investigation. And so that's, we see that a lot, you know, internal audit, perhaps there's an FIU or, you know, folks within the organization that have some of the skill sets necessary to kind of vet out these allegations. But if they're successful in proving out some or all of the allegations at hand, and they're of sufficient gravity, that's a good time to pause and then reevaluate, you know, particularly if any of these allegations would necessitate some sort of outside disclosures to shareholders or law enforcement or not. So that's often the way these things play out, is that, you know, there's an internal review and then they evaluate what they have, and then it usually gets to a point where it's going to take longer and it's going to require more resources, and that's another reason why you might then want to transition to an outside resource.
Would it also, by the way, be the case that companies do this when, say, for example, senior management's involved, to give the investigator a little more sense of independence?
In a situation like that, you may want to actually skip step one, because it, you know, to a certain extent can have a chilling effect on the internal resources that may be tasked with the internal investigation because of, everyone's, parochial concerns about retaliation or, making a career limiting move. So in situations like that, often it progresses immediately to outside resources.
Okay. Now, a company's moved the investigation to an outside resource. It's moving along. You know, these days, a lot of times investigations go very long and get very expensive. And as part of reviewing that, there may be a situation where you think maybe it's not working outright with the outside investigator. You may want to move it, but that can be expensive, difficult, starting from square one. When is it time to sort of bite the bullet and say, we need to move on to another firm?
Yeah, those are difficult situations, but, you know, they're not out of the realm. You know, they certainly happen. A lot of times, there can be a lot of different factors that contribute to it, including, by the way, they don't like the findings, or maybe there's just not a good chemistry between the investigative team, the client, and the outside counsel, to the extent outside counsel is involved. You know, because so it's usually kind of an amalgamation of all of those things. Is it are we well past the agreed upon budget? Has the work plan not really been followed and there hasn't been a conversation to discuss changes in scope, which, you know, by the way, is not at all unusual for the scope to change. It's the investigations seldom follow a straight line, and lots of unforeseen things happen. But I think it's one of the more difficult decisions to make for the reasons that you just alluded to. It's expensive, but there is a way to do it with the minimum amount of duplication of effort. Necessarily, there needs to be some, because the successor outside resource needs to get up to speed. That means they need to review work product. They need to be briefed and otherwise kind of catch up with the prior firm. But at the end of the day, if it doesn't appear as if the initial outside firm is going to be able to bring the project to its conclusion, then often that is what drives the decision to transition to another firm.
Now, you mentioned there the idea about briefing the new firm. What data is most useful to give them? I mean, you want to give them enough to take advantage of what's been done, but you don't want to end up, somehow steering them in one direction or the other inadvertently by what data you do and don't present.
Yeah, I think, so initially you got to get the same information that the prior firm has. What were the allegations? What's been done so far? What have you been able to do? What data is available to us? Have there been any, is there any information, data, witnesses, or what have you that have not yet been available? Because ultimately, what you're trying to avoid is, taking a very expensive project and doubling the cost. So to the extent that, the successor firm can do some limited procedures to kind of make the work product that by the prior firm their own, vetting it out and getting to a point where they're comfortable that they would, they would come to the same conclusion. That's I think a very important part of the transition.
So, is there any data that tends to be a distraction and isn't important?
One of the things that can be a distraction is sometimes the clients have their own maybe preconceptions on the, who's responsible or what the outcome of the investigation is going to be or is likely going to be. And, sometimes that's supported by the facts at hand, but it's very important to kind of get behind that data to make sure that the client isn't inadvertently introducing a bias into the investigation and then causing it to go off the rails a little bit. So that's the one thing that is very important, whether it's at the outset of an investigation or transitioning from one provider to the next, is just to make sure that we're separating biases from facts, because that can really taint an investigation or just cause a lot of unnecessary effort collecting data, focusing on the wrong people or the wrong behaviors when there's plenty of work to do that is more on point with the allegations at hand.
Yeah, as you were saying that, so it reminded me of somebody once said, these are the conclusions from which I draw my facts. And it's a funny phrase, but unfortunately it's too true. And certainly, and it affects us in all areas of our lives, but especially when you're doing a sensitive investigation, you don't want the conclusions that you've already reached in your mind to cloud the efforts of the people who are actually trying to find the facts. So finally, what obstacles should the organizations clear to make the investigation process go smoothly? I mean, such as, for example, preparing the ability to work with represented workers.
So it's very important to really understand what every potential witness or subject's situation is, the framework within which investigations should be undertaken. So if you've got represented persons involved, they have to be handled a certain way. Counsel needs to be speaking to counsel and coming to agreement as to how those interviews are undertaken, how they're staged, and who is present. There are other situations where perhaps some portion of the workforce that you need access to are subject to a collective bargaining agreement. They're members of a labor union. It's important, typically a collective bargaining agreement has guardrails around how internal investigations should be undertaken, what the union members' rights are. So these are all things that are very important for the investigative firm to understand. It might be second nature to the organization, but not necessarily to the investigative team. And then, of equal importance is, increasingly organizations have investigative policies and procedures that their internal investigative personnel and legal and human resources are have to follow. Well, your outside service providers should also be following them, but they have to be aware of what they are. So those are all really important, things to make sure are not obstacles, or for that matter, don't cause the investigation to be done in a way that is then a departure from how they're supposed to be undertaken. So that, and then, I guess the last thing that's really just important for anyone doing an internal investigation, whether it's an internal resource or outside party, is to be very attuned to the fact that investigations are anxiety producing. They negatively impact morale. And for that matter, just the fact that someone is being interviewed and where they're being interviewed and the fact that people know they're being interviewed could have long-term consequences for that person, irrespective of whether or not they're a witness or a subject. So all of those, cultural and morale implications likewise need to be part of the that those need to be removed as obstacles so that the investigation can be done in as productive and in a least disruptive manner.
Well, definitely a lot there to think about as people move already through a process that requires a lot of thought. Scott, thanks for sharing these insights with us. I want to thank all of you for taking the time to listen today. I'm Adam Turteltaub from SCCE and ATCA. I hope we're able to expand your compliance perspective.